Okay, here's the thing about horses. They're big. Some of them weigh like 10 times what a human being weighs, and they're very smart, and they definitely have a mind of their own. And in some cases, they do what they want to do, which can be really dangerous, especially when the rider is inexperienced. Brandon was an equestrian stuntman for 17 years. That just means he was paid to do stunts and perform some crazy stuff with horses. And most of this was done at Renaissance fairs all around the country here in the U.S. If you're not familiar with what a Renaissance fair is, it's quite a production.
When people talk about Renaissance fairs, they're mostly referring to the permanent ones that are there that open for usually about 2 months. Some of them run a little shorter, some of them run a little longer. It's sort of just like a theme park, especially some of the ones I've performed at. There's one in Pennsylvania and Central PA that is basically the Disneyland of Renaissance fairs, where it's you just go there, everyone's in, you know, period clothing. The food is themed for the period. There's, you know, games, real basic carnival games, throwing axes, knives, stuff like that. Jugglers, there's a lot of different stage acts. And then a few fairs in the country have professional actor casts that will be in costume, and there'll be a storyline that goes throughout the day that people can follow.
You'd think someone who made a career out of working with horses must have grown up with horses, right? Like Brandon must have maybe grown up on a farm.
No, actually, I didn't. I'm a city kid. I grew up in the Milwaukee area, playing hockey for most of my youth.
But one day, as a young man, Brandon and his family were at one of these Renaissance fairs, and Brandon had a chance meeting with a guy who made him an offer.
My family and I, we always used to go to the local, the Bristol Renaissance Fair, which is sort of on the border of Illinois and Wisconsin. And I had a couple buddies, and I just started talking to one of them, and he was like, you know, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I got nothing going on right now. And he was like, well, hey, I have this little small stunt company that's an offshoot of this larger stunt company that I work for. And if you want to come and learn what we do, you know, I'd love to have you. And I was like, well, yeah, dude, this is, why not? I'm always into trying out weird stuff, you know, I don't like doing things the boring or the safe way. So I'm not the smartest guy in the world.
Now, the big thing that the stunt guys in this company would do at Renaissance fairs is the jousting. You've probably seen this in movies. Two guys, each dressed up in full armor, each one with a big shield, and a long jousting lance. I mean, like 6 or 7 feet long. And they're each on a big horse, and they go running at each other, and each man is trying to knock the other one off his horse. Sounds like fun, right? But when you're a newbie, you don't start off doing the big jousting stunts. You start off as what is known as a squire.
They were always looking for squires because that's how most joust companies will get people in. And the squires are the guys on the ground whose job it is to basically, I mean, a lot of people see squires in a show and they just look like, you know, almost like you see a tennis match and you got the kids running across grabbing the ball. Like, that's kind of what the squires are doing in a real basic sense. They're clearing the field of stuff to keep it out of the way of the horses. They're making sure that the guys on horseback, because obviously when you have a helm on and stuff, you can't see very well. So the squires are, it seems like they're not doing much, but in reality, they're the most important part of the show. Without good squires, people get hurt and things go really wrong. And then if they're not good squires, they can't fix it when something goes wrong. So then things go really wrong.
So Brandon was working as a squire. What he didn't know was that his initiation into the world of equestrian stunt riding wasn't going to happen exactly like he thought it would. Real people in unreal situations.
There is a man standing in front of me in my bedroom.
My friend has been shot.
I'm literally inside the river, and I'm inside my car.
He had told me multiple times that he was going to set himself on fire.
If you say my name or try to look at me, I'm going to kill you.
And he was just sobbing. He said, Mom, tell me you're going to be okay.
And I jumped on the hood of the car, and I held on.
And I looked into the garage, and he was hanging from the rafters.
I had somebody standing on my neck.
He's better to me dead. I want him dead.
I'm Scott Johnson. And this is What Was That Like? Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad, and then on with today's episode.
Hey, do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh, stories that are great for adults and kids alike. For years now, Sleepy has helped millions of people catch some much-needed Z's, start their next day off fresh, and discover old books that they didn't know they loved. So, whether you have a tough time snoozing or you just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune into Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes each week. Sweet dreams. Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Your first time, you said you started on the ground, but
yeah.
What was it like for you, your first time actual stunt riding? What was that experience like?
It started real quick because, I probably squired for them for about a year, maybe a little bit longer, where, you know, occasionally in a rehearsal, I would get on a horse, I'd trot around and stuff, or I would just kind of sit on a horse to just kind of get the feel of what it was like while we would have a rehearsal. Cause I mean, as you imagine, shows like this require a lot of rehearsing during the week because we'd perform on the weekends, but we'd rehearse every day during the week. So it was a lot of work. But I would just kind of like, if the guys were done rehearsing and the horses needed to be walked out, you know, maybe I'd just get up on the horse and sit on it just to see what it was like. But I didn't really do any what I would consider riding until we were doing one of these temporary shows. And it was a 2 or 3 weekend little sort of Renaissance fair that they were doing popped up in this park. So in these situations, in Iowa, it's great because, you know, people have animals and stuff there. So what we would do, there was a horse barn that just happened to be close by to where the fair was being held in this park. It was probably about a mile away, I would say. But the cool thing about it was to get from the horse barn to the joust arena, we could just ride the horses down because it really wasn't that far away. And it was all through grass and fields and stuff. So we had this girl who just started working for the company who was going to be our groom, taking care of the horses, while we're doing shows. We'd always try to keep one person who would just be a full-time barn person to make sure that when we're doing shows and stuff, if any of the horses aren't in the show, if there was a problem with them or something like that, it just made us feel safer that, and plus then if anything totally went wrong, we had somebody who was not involved in the show that could come and help, So we had just hired this girl. And she had a lot of horse experience. She'd worked with horses for years. But horses are like people. They're very individual and they all have their own personalities. So even if you've worked with horses in general for years, if you go work for a new company of horses, you still have to get to know that group of horses like you'd have to get to know a group of people at a new job. And so at this point, I think she'd only been with the company for like a few months because she didn't know. I mean, she knew she'd seen the horses that we were using for this run of shows. She'd worked with them enough to know the main things about their personalities, but not enough time to know their little idiosyncrasies and little tweaks and stuff. So she decides one day that she's going to take me for my first like actual ride. We're going to ride the horses down through these fields to get to where the park is. And this park, no one would, like the other vendors and things hadn't set up yet. So it was pretty much just like a wide open green fielded area with trees that had like a road construction fence as a huge perimeter. And then the joust field was a smaller one inside of it, but there was nobody there yet. So we're like, yeah, this is perfect time. She thought Brandon needs to get on a horse. This will be a perfect time. No one's around. There's going to, no vendors to spook the horse, no loud noises, anything like that. And she thought, we're going to put him on this horse named Caesar, who was one of the horses that started with the joust company. He was an old boy at this point, even. I think he was probably 20, 21, 22 at the time, which is getting up there for a horse. We've had horses that have lived to be almost 40. They can keep going, but he was at that point where he was still in the shows because he was a reliable horse, but he was an old guy. He was tired, so he didn't, he loved performing in the show, but if you wanted to try to take him out for any other kind of rides, it was like, this will be perfect. This horse isn't going to take off. He's not going to do anything weird because he's old and tired and he'll just go along with it, So she puts me on him and she gets on this draft mix that we had, this horse named Bonnie, who was this big, wide, I forget what she was a cross of, but she was a mix with a draft horse breed. So she was big and slow. So we tack up these horses and we go for a ride down through the field. And so she's explaining to me as we come down through the fields, all the basics of horse riding. You want to keep your back straight, keep your heels down. You hold the reins with your fingers like this. You're not never yanking in the horse's mouth. You just, every light touches, you turn your shoulders. She's giving me all the little, trying to not over, inundate me with stuff, just giving me the basics. I'm riding Caesar and everything's going great. He's this old horse. He's being real nice to me. Like we've done a little bit of trotting, a little bit of walking on our way down towards the fairgrounds. And I should explain that as we're coming down to the fairgrounds, there was a lot of like the walk from the barn. It was a small field and then mostly trees and grass to where then it got down into the fairgrounds, which was about half trees and half open space. So we're kind of just trotting through these trees and Laurel is telling me, the basics of horse riding and everything's going good. We get around to where we're about ready to come out into the fairgrounds. And my horse kind of stops for a second. And I'm like, why is he stopping here? And she's like, he's just give him a little nudge, whatever. And I see him kind of ticking his head around. Like he's like looking, like, trying to figure out how to explain. So he's kind of just darting his eyes around like he's looking for something. It was a behavior that he hadn't done yet. And me knowing nothing about horses at this point, I'm like, what's going on here? And out of nowhere, we step through this clearing and he sees the wide open field. And apparently what Laurel didn't know about this old horse was he is an old man and he does his job in the show and, but he has this short circuit about open fields. He has to run when he sees an open field. And it takes a very experienced rider to keep him from doing this because he's an old horse. And horses are very sensitive and very perceptive, and they can tell by the way you're distributing your weight on their back how experienced of a rider you are.
And you were like the opposite of an experienced.
Oh my god! Oh my god! He's like this kid's a dummy. Like he's like when he decided when he saw that open field and he's like, I'm gonna run. Like I wasn't a thought in his head. He had completely forgotten I was even there. I was such a non-threat to being able to prevent him from having his fun. So he looks up, sees the open field, and he takes off. And I don't know if you've, have you ever been on a galloping horse, like a full on running horse?
Not really fast. I've ridden some, but not really.
Like at a canter, but like fast. never yeah. A full on gallop. The thing about a horse at a gallop is their back moves almost not at all. It's like jet smooth. And this horse, even though he was old, when he wanted to go, I would put this horse against any of the horses that we had in the company speed-wise. He was lightning when he wanted to run. And he is full-on sprint. So the first few seconds, I'm just in total shock. I have no idea what to do. I'm just trying to hold on, you know, which luckily, like I said, is fairly easy because his back's not moving. The hardest thing to do when you're learning how to ride is learning how to deal with a trot. Either you ride English style by posting where you kind of stand up and down to match the up and down rhythm of the horse's back. You kind of catch it on the 1 and 3 beat so that you're not just slapping. Then there's also, when you get to be a better rider, you learn how to sit the trot where you can just kind of like roll your hips to stay on the horse's back so that you're not popping up and down. But when a horse is running full out, it's like I said, not moving at all. So I got no problem staying on, but also we're going like really fast. This horse is really fast. And at first it's not a problem because he saw open field when we came through the trees and he's just running through this open field. So I'm like, great. Like it's scary, but I'm also thinking like at this point, if I got a ditch or something, it's just green grass around me. No big deal. You know, yeah, we're going really fast. It's probably going to hurt if I jump off, but like, it'll be all right. So I'm just hanging on at this point. And I hear Laurel, the groom, yelling at me from this because her horse at this point hasn't even started moving yet. Because not only is she on this big, fat, slow draft cross, but when Caesar took off, it was just like someone fired a starting pistol and he was out. So I vaguely hear her yelling something as we kind of disappear into the distance, which was one of the little bits of advice she was trying to offer me on the way down, which is if a horse ever does take off on you and you can't, it's not listening to any of the normal cues that you're giving to stop, it is sort of like a pull the ripcord last ditch effort. What you can do is you can grab one rein and pull that rein all the way in, trying to get the horse to kind of turn his head into his shoulder. And usually they'll either get annoyed with that and stop, or they'll kind of circle, you know, and you can kind of just circle them into a stop and then calm them down and get off them. So like I hear her kind of yelling this as I'm running away and I'm like, oh shit, right. Okay. So at this point, he's just at a full on gallop, just running through this open field. But like I said, they had the fairgrounds kind of partitioned off in various areas with this construction fence for where these other vendors were going to set up and where they were going to have certain things kind of, you know, to funnel people in through the entrance. And because this was just a big open park, they had to create all this stuff for where these things were going to go. So he sees this orange fence, and luckily the one that he sees is it's just a big perimeter fence. So he starts running along this fence. So now we're running along it and I can see he's trying to find a way out of it. Now he knows he's kind of contained and he doesn't want to be. He wants to keep running through this field.
He knows what the job of a fence is.
Right. Yes. He even though it's one of these plastic fence, he probably could have jumped it. I mean, I've been on horses that have gone that route before too, where they run to a fence and they go, dude, I got this. I'm not worried about it. And they just jump over it. But he was like, probably too old to do it. And he knew that. So, but he recognized it. So he's like, shit, he's following this fence. So now we're at a full on gallop and we're kind of slowly going around this perimeter of this fence. And then I'm kind of toggling back and forth between this is really awesome because I had never been on a horse under my own control before when I arguably still was not under on a horse under my own control, but I'd never been on a horse that was galloping. And like the first time you do, and it is cool. I mean, like the wind is just ripping past your head and like, it's so cool. But then I realized in between going back and forth of like, oh shit, I'm going to die. And then like, oh, this is also kind of cool. I realize he's running along this fence and it's a problem because this fence, the fence leads right just into the woods. From my perspective, that's all I can see is this fence just runs and then there's no gap until tree line. And on the left side of the fence where we're currently running, the only other thing there happens to be this large tree that we're kind of now starting to run towards. Well, right as I kind of realize this, like I'm like, oh shit, now I'm probably going to have to make a decision because I don't know what he's going to do. Cause he's still at a full gallop. We still have, I've got some time before we get to the tree line, but he's moving and he doesn't look like he's looking to slow down. I swear to God, this image is burning my head for the rest of my life. I'm yanking his, because I'm trying to pull either one of the reins in to get his head into his, and I'm pulling. Like, I got this rein, and like I'm trying to start a mower. Like, I'm just yanking on this thing. It turns out that might have been the dumbest thing I could have done, because I think that was what reminded him I was still there. I think up until this point, he was just in his happy place of just sprinting. And when I got up in his mouth, you know, trying to get him to stop, this image I have burned in my brain, he turned around like at a full gallop. His head was almost in his shoulder, and he's still running full out. And he looks at me like, this asshole. And I'm like, oh no, dude. So now he's at a full gallop. When he gets his head back straight again, I realized when he gave me that look, I'm like, I'm done yanking in your mouth, dude. I'm sorry. Now he's running and he's clearly pissed off at me. So he's kind of shake. He's twitching here and there. Like, he's trying to kind of throw me, but he doesn't want to stop running. And I'm like, now I'm really like, I don't know what to do. Then I see, as we're following this fence, getting closer to the tree line, he aims us directly for that tree to my left. And this is a big ass tree, man. It's a huge tree. And he's running, not like next to it. He's running full on at it. Like, he's just going to like kill us both. Like, if he can't run for joy, he doesn't want to live. And he's just going to full on both of us into this tree.
It's a kamikaze horse. Dude, it sounds like
that's what I'm thinking of. Cause he wasn't even pretending as though he was going to dodge this tree. He's now running at a full gallop right for this tree. So I'm panicking. We're getting closer to the tree. Right before he gets to the tree, he does this little crow hop, this little, like, he jumps from his right to his left, and then one big jump to avoid the tree at the last second. So I get, you know, thrown from side to side. And I'm lucky that I was able to squeeze hard enough with my legs to hold on from that last minute jump to avoid the tree off to the right. Because if I would have lost my balance, I think what he was trying to do was make me lose my balance that way so that the tree would just clean me off of him. And had that happened, I would have been probably dead. Because we were going, I mean, he had to be doing 30 miles an hour, 35, 40 miles. I mean, he was full on sprint. Luckily, I squeezed with my legs strong enough to stay in the saddle, but I'm off balance now. And I'm kind of tilting off to the left-hand side because that last jump around the tree threw my momentum to the left. And I'm struggling to hold on. And what I didn't see was right before we got to the tree line, which was right after we passed this tree, there was a little gap in the fence before the tree, this little man gate size gap in the fence that he saw and was going for clearly.
I don't know how many other people do this, but I like to plan my weekly meals. Maybe I'm just weird, but I like quick and easy. That's just one of the benefits you can get with Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code what before checkout to get 50% off your first week. One of the dishes I recently had was the Green Goddess falafel bowl. Oh, I loved it. The falafel was seasoned perfectly, and I love how crispy it is on the outside, but really moist on the inside. It's a signature dish of Enat Admoni. She's known around the world as a chef. You've probably seen her on TV. And her dishes are made right here in Florida, so I'm supporting local business, and I love that. And the convenience of Cook Unity is crazy. I mean, I've got podcast episodes to produce. I don't have time for cooking. These meals are delivered fully cooked. So when it's time to eat, I pick a meal based on my mood for that day. I heat it for a few minutes and enjoy. The menus are updated every week, so there's always something new to try. You can choose from over 350 meals based on your dietary needs or taste preferences, or go wild and have Cook Unity pick for you, because every meal is just amazing.
Make the best meal plan ever with the convenience, chef-level quality, and endless variety of Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code WHAT. Or going to cookunity.com/what.
Welcome to the I Can't Sleep podcast with Benjamin Boster. If you're tired of sleepless nights, you'll love the I Can't Sleep podcast. I help quiet your mind by reading random articles from across the web to bore you to sleep with my soothing voice. Each episode provides enough interesting content to hold your attention, and then your mind lets you drift off. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. That's I Can't Sleep with Benjamin Boster.
Hey, do you have trouble sleeping? Then maybe you should check out the Sleepy Podcast. It's a show where I read old books in the public domain to help you get to sleep. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of classic stories like A Tale of Two Cities, Pride and Prejudice, Winnie the Pooh. Stories that are great for adults and kids alike. For years now, Sleepy has helped millions of people catch some much-needed Z's, start their next day off fresh, and discover old books that they didn't know they loved. So, whether you have a tough time snoozing or you just like a good bedtime story, fluff up the cool side of your pillow and tune into Sleepy. Unless you're driving, then please don't listen to Sleepy. Find Sleepy on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes each week. Sweet dreams.
So he, as I'm off balance to the left-hand side, he makes another right turn to jump through this gate. And that was all, that was it for me. Like that was too much momentum throwing me more to the left again to stay on. So I start to come off. But at the last second, the stirrup sticks on my foot, on the my right foot over the top of the saddle. So as I'm coming off the horse, my right foot sticks. So now my right foot is up about just a little bit below the line of the saddle, like almost on the saddle itself. My right foot's up there and the rest of me is off dragging in the grass.
So you're, wait a minute, you fell off to the left, but it's your right foot that was stuck?
Yes. So as I was coming off the horse to the left, my feet were in both of the stirrups and I didn't know anything about horse riding at this point. Cause when you do saddle falls for real, you kick your stirrups out ahead of time to avoid this problem entirely. I had no plans on coming off this horse, so my feet were still in those stirrups. So my left foot came out. It swung off as I was going over, but my right foot stayed in the stirrup. So if you can imagine my foot in the stirrup and then my weight holding it down on top of the saddle kind of locked my foot in the stirrup on top of the saddle while the rest of my body is like ragdoll dragging off his left side on the ground.
Right.
Does that make sense?
And does the saddle slide over or was it tight enough?
It was tight enough. It didn't move. If it moved just a little bit, but yeah, the girth wasn't loose enough for it to swing around, which actually probably worked out to my benefit. Cause when that tends to happen to horses, they feel the saddle go under their stomach. That really freaks them out. They flip out. That's when you need to cut the saddle loose or something because they're just going to start bucking usually. Cause the saddle pokes them in weird spots when it's upside down. So now he's running at a full gallop and my right leg, I'm kind of doing it and I'm not a flexible guy. I'm kind of doing the splits because my right leg and the rest of my body is like one of those little string figures that, you know, when you press it down, they fall apart. And then when you let go, they stand up. I'm just dragging like a windsock string man, like just in my right leg is up over the saddle. And I don't know what to do because like now he hasn't slowed down at all. He's still at a full gallop. But luckily he's running through the grass. So I'm getting hit by his feet, you know, every so often, like his hooves are kicking me and whatever. But like, I'm so far, I'm doing okay. For about the first 100 yards of being dragged, I'm hanging in there.
When you say the first 100 yards, I mean, that's the length of a football field doing this.
So and again, this is the first time I'm ever on a horse under my own control. And so he's about first 100 yards, he's dragging me. And then again, I have another one of these images of him where he's sprinting and then he does that same thing where he puts his head down and he looks at me and he's like, almost this look of like, oh dude, you're still here? What are you still doing here? I thought I got rid of you. He then does this thing where he decides that he doesn't want, like he, you know, clearly he's dragging me and this isn't working for him. So he starts to adjust his course at a full gallop from the grass into the tree line. So he's still running in the field and now I'm in the woods banging off of trees and stumps and branches and shit while he's full on galloping. Cause I guess he figured at some point I'm going to hit a tree and it's going to clean me off of him. So I don't know exactly. Cause once we got into the woods, obviously my perception of what's going on is pretty, I mean, it was pretty tough to keep track of what was happening when I was just in the grass. now I'm banging off of trees and rocks. And like, I have no idea. All I know is he dragged me for at least the same amount of time I'd already been dragging before, by pure chance, maybe just me trying to flop around, trying to avoid trees and branches and stuff. I was able to twist my foot in such a way that it popped out of the stirrup, and he kept going, and I got out and just laid in the woods for a little bit. I mean, it took me, you know, like I've been telling the story for a few minutes now, but like, this was like, in reality, you know, 2 minutes, you know, maybe from the time he saw the field to the time he finally got rid of me. And then, so I'm laying in the woods, and a few minutes later, Laurel rides up on her big giraffe cross, because it took her that long to catch up to us. And she's like, "Are you okay?" And yeah, I think so. You know, I'm doing the standard check of, you know, can I stand, you know, touching my legs. And I think I might've broke something then. I just never went to the hospital because I was, you know, 17, didn't really have insurance. But yeah, she had to go chase. She tried to chase Caesar. Once he got rid of me, he just frolicked around the field for a few minutes and then was like, "All right, I'm done." He didn't resist being captured by her. She just kind of walked up and grabbed his reins. And the thing about riding is that old adage of, you got to get right back on the horse. You do. Because if a horse does this, if they throw you, if they do something that is dangerous, you have to immediately show them that that's not okay. And the way that we would do that, because we were all positive training, like a lot of horse training can be really abusive and negative. And all the companies I worked for were all about positive reinforcement training. So we never, you know, never hit horses. We never, you know, any of that old school stuff. But what we would do if a horse disbehaved like this is we would run them for a little bit, you know. So we went into the little joust arena there, and, you know, I limped my way back in there, and I got on his back and just rode him in circles for a little bit, and, you know, to show him like, hey, it's not that easy to get rid of me, you know. And but yeah, it was tough because that was my first real time on a horse, and Laura was old school about it, man. She just looked at me and she's like, you know, you got to get back on him, right? And I'm like, Yeah, I do. And she went and got him. We went in the arena and ran for a little bit and then took him back to the barn and gave him treats and hosed him off and all that.
It seems like it would have made sense for you guys to have opposite horses.
100%. Yeah. In retrospect, of course, that would have been right. But like I said, I don't fault her at all, because now, having been around horses for so many years, you know, I could have very easily made the same mistake, because by appearances, you know, if you watched him in a show, you know, you could tell that he was an older horse, and, you know, he could do the job, but he wasn't a threat. He, you know, he's a guy boring old routine type horse, you know? So he absolutely would have been one of my choices. If somebody was like, what horse should you put this newbie on? I would have picked him too. So I don't blame her. It's just, she, like I said, you got it. Horses are like people, you know. That was a little tick that he had that she didn't know he had. And that's how I learned that lesson anyway. And had a, Yeah.
I've heard you talked about something called a saddle fall.
Yeah.
Can you describe what that is and how you're supposed to do it?
Sure.
And how do you learn how to do that?
It's scary. It's okay. So the saddle fall is basically the standard thing that any theatrical jouster is going to have to learn how to do, because that's what everybody wants to see. They want to see the big blowout. So the way that we do them safe, you know, as safe as can be, we have the whole show choreographed. So we know who's coming off the horse when, you know, well, it'll be like, okay, we're doing 5-6 passes, whatever. I hit you, then you hit me, then we both hit each other, blah, blah, blah. And then, okay, on the 6th pass, I'm coming off. So at the top of my set, the way that each joust pass would start, this is another point as to why the squires are important. Like I said, you got your helm on. We have almost no peripheral vision and just very limited frontal vision. It's just this little slit. Which is all of our helms. And even though, like I said, we do theatrical stuff, we wore all real armor, because there are many times where that helm saved my life, where if a hit went wrong, shield skipped off and hit me in the head. And had I worn like a plastic helm or something like that, I'd be in bad shape. The squires on the ground, because we have such limited vision, they kind of set up the pass. They're talking to you the whole time. A good squire is always talking to you, telling you what the other guy's doing. Okay, he turns, he looks for you, raise your... So the horses, they'll turn our horses into the lane, and then we raise our lances as a signal to each other that we're both ready to go, and then we start the pass charging at each other. So when you're going to do a saddle fall, at the top of your pass, you kick your stirrups off your feet before the pass starts. Then you go into your pass. And then what you do is, when you take your hit on the shield, which is in your left hand. You lean back, you let go of the reins entirely so that you're not, a lot of guys would let go really early before they take the hit, just to make sure that there was no chance of them popping the horse in the mouth or anything when they get hit. But you let go of the reins and you kind of just like, you're going to lay back. Like, you remember those old Nestea commercials where they would like fall backwards into a pool, you know, that like they just let go and fall like a trust fall almost. That's kind of what you do. You like lean back on the horse, you let your shield drop off to the left, you drop your lance to the right side. And then you kind of just roll off your off the butt of the horse, kicking your right leg up over, or your left leg up over, and just kind of roll up off the horse's butt. And he kind of runs out from underneath you. You kind of do like a little somersault, and you fall in the sand.
And what do you land on your back?
A lot of guys will land feet first, because you kind of like, think of it like, have you ever had to ditch like riding a bicycle or a motorcycle, something where you kind of just quick kick your leg up over it, jump off, and you can kind of keep running, that type of thing? It's a similar concept to a saddle fall, but you're just laying back more. But the same principle of kicking your leg over and just, so you can, if you want to brace your fall, you can kind of hit with your feet and then crumble and roll so that it looks good. But then a lot of guys will, you know, they have different styles. One of my bosses would do this really great fall where he would basically just reach his arms back like he was going to do sort of like a side dive into a pool. And his hands would always hit the ground first because he would literally just reach off the horse. If I was wearing a bunch of armor, I would do a fall very similar to that one. So I would drop my stuff and then instead of kicking my leg back over I would straight up just roll back a back somersault off the horse. Which is terrifying the first time you do it.
Yeah, that's what I'm just trying to imagine the very first time you do this. I mean, it's like the first time you jump off a high dive or,
yeah.
You know, first time you jump out of an airplane, you know, it's got to just be terrifying, that first one.
Yeah, it is, especially when when I was learning and when a lot of guys were learning them, you don't always have the benefit of a really nice field with really deep sand. So a lot of times you're learning how to do saddle falls on grass or on kind of hard packed dirt. That's real intimidating. I mean, it doesn't seem like sitting on a horse, you're that high in the air until you're sitting on a horse and you're like, shit, I'm kind of high up off the ground. And now you want me to fall off this horse who's running at not a full gallop, but a fast canter. And it's scary. I mean, you kind of just have to force yourself. I mean, when you're first learning, we'll kind of step up to it, you know, like first you jump off at like a trot and then, you know, we'll pick it up to like a little bit like a slow lope and then like you get faster and faster. But the weird thing about saddle falls, it's actually easier to do the faster the horse is going, because our number one thing was making sure the horse was safe. So people started learning saddle falls with nothing in their hands because we couldn't trust them. You'd panic and drop the shield on the horse or drop the lance on his head or whatever.
I would think the number one thing is that the rider is safe, but the horses are the asset here. We need to protect them.
That's not how we operated though. Our horses were, they mattered more to us than anything else. So everything we did was centered around how is this going to work for the horse? Is the horse okay? And you have to think that way because I mean, that horse is really like in a show like that is taking care of you, man. I mean, I've had plenty of horses that have really saved me from possibly bad situations just because we became friends, just like you become friends with a person. We ended up with a good working relationship. They like me and they wanted to, you know, look out for me. I mean, if you're going to be doing crazy shit on horses, man, you gotta know those horses. You gotta trust those horses more than anything. You trust the horse first and then, but you also get, I mean, they're still horses, so you can't rely on them, but you still have to put a lot of trust in them. And then obviously you put a ton of trust in the guys you're working with.
Is that kind of related with your philosophy of positive training as opposed to the old school type? Can you just talk about that a little bit, how that affects your connection with the horse?
The way that the companies that I worked for did things is, in the horse world, there's a very cowboy mentality of this old alpha male macho, like, they call it when you're taking a horse that is unfamiliar with riding, they call it breaking a horse, you know, got to break him. And that's, the guys I worked with and myself, we didn't agree with that have to dominate the animal mentality. So we started looking into a lot of other research, like how to train horses, learning their language almost. So what, one of the companies I worked for where we did the craziest stuff with horses, where we would get these horses to stand on pedestals and to bow and to rear on command. We had horses that would ride through fire, all this crazy stuff. When I was working for that company, that was when I really started training horses, because we would start using this method that's it was a hybrid method called Liberty training, where you start on the ground with the horse in a round pen. Because horses communicate with each other through body language, it's basically you're learning a very simplified version of their horse language, and they're learning that you're learning that. So what you do is you have a horse in a round pen, and you start with, you have like a lunge whip and like a little riding crop, just almost to work like, you know, the guys at airports with the flashlights that wave people in. That's kind of the same concept you're using with these whips. You're not whipping the horse. You're just using them as guides to show them where to go. So you start by kind of, you'll have the horse in the round pen, and by angling like your right shoulder in, you take a step in with your right foot and right shoulder, and that'll cue the horse to run around the arena to the right. And then if you take a step back, he'll stop. And if you step in with your left foot, he'll turn and run to the left. So you start with these really basic activities of him watching you for physical cues as to when he's supposed to turn. And like, then after they get that, then you start doing things where you step back and the horse will come to you to the center of the arena, and then you can step to the side and he'll keep going. And then, so you start doing all these little physical cues that they're watching you now and you're watching them. And eventually you can get a horse to the point where you don't have any whips in your hands and you're not even moving in a really pronounced way anymore. It's very subtle, where you're just kind of angling your body and making small movements. And once that horse has worked with you and they know you, that's how you get these. I mean, there's guys out there who do really crazy stuff with Liberty training, where they get horses basically to act like dogs, you know, where they can roll over and get them to play with their hooves and do all kinds of goofy, you know, comedy stuff.
And the people in the crowd, the audience, isn't going to notice these subtle moves
exactly
that the person is making, but the horse sees it.
Exactly. And the benefit to this type of training, too, is now you're learning their language. And you're also, there's something about starting to train a horse from the ground like this that establishes this really strong connection with them. My theory is just because, you know, you're not coming at them from a position of dominating them. You're coming at them from this position of equals, of like, look, man, I want to work with you. I want you to work with me. But if you're not feeling it, that's fine. We don't have to, you know, like, we never forced a horse to do anything. There's a way to train a horse, and you coach him how to do something, but there's always a point where you go like, okay, that's enough of this for today. You know, we'll come back tomorrow. Maybe they'll go a little further tomorrow and a little further. With this company, I would spend months training an individual horse in the round pen. You know, we'd get there in the wintertime and start training 2, 3, 4 months ahead of time to get these horses to do what we wanted them to do.
Is there an incentive? Like, you've got a snack for them every time they do something? Or okay.
Yeah, we had apple biscuits, you know, carrots, vegetables, stuff like that. Anytime that we were teaching them, like when we teach horses to stand on a pedestal, you know, you break all these tricks down into really basic steps. You know, first you pick up his foot and you put it on the pedestal, and then you jam treats in his mouth, you know, he loves it. And then you get him to kind of shift his weight to be, and okay, now he's kind of leaning on the pedestal, and the whole time you're feeding him. And then, so it's like positive reinforcement training, like with any other animal. Like, when they're doing what you want, you keep them happy, you keep feeding them. That reminds me, we had this one horse in relation to this. His name was Thor, and he was a half draft mix with a Frisian. Do you know what a Frisian is?
Nope.
If you've ever seen a movie with a beautiful black horse in it, it's a Frisian. The ones that have the really wavy manes and they're jet black and they look shiny and they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, this horse was half that and then half this like ugly draft cross. So he was, if you put a beautiful Frisian into like a funhouse mirror and just made him like wide like a couch and like give him a square head, but then he still had this beautiful fur and mane, that was this horse. But he was super food motivated. So when we were teaching this horse to stand on a pedestal, he like got it right away. Like it, I mean, he learned immediately because he loved these treats we'd give him. So one day after training, you know, we would always have a turnout area for the horses where we'd put them out in the paddock and just kind of let them roam around in a field overnight, you know, toss hay for them and whatever. So we had this area turnout where we were teaching the horses, and there was a fallen log out in this field. And so we would drive by, and every time I'd see Thor out in this field, I'd see him chewing on this log. And I'm like, what? Why is he like, at first, like, we were kind of concerned. We're like, is he deficient in some, you know, nutrient or something? Like, is this a vitamin? Is it a weird behavioral thing? But then every time we, you know, at night we go by, we'd see him. He's just little by little over the course of about a month, he's just, you know, every now and then just chewing on this log. And we're like, okay, whatever. I mean, if he wants to chew on an old log, he can chew on an old log. It's not going to hurt him. Until one day we go to lunch and he's out in the field standing on the log waiting to be treated. He had made his own pedestal to stand on. So wow. He could, yeah, that's how much he wanted to like, he spent about a month whittling this fallen log down enough that he could stand on it. This fat ass could get up on it. And
he deserved to be treated.
Exactly.
After that,
right? When I saw that shit, I laughed so hard. I immediately went back to the barn and got him some treats. I went out there and I was like, you earned it, buddy. You worked so hard for this. But yeah, that's that. I mean, it shows you that the horses really dig it. I think that's what a lot of people don't realize about these shows is, If you're training the animals right, they love performing as much as you love performing. When we'd be backstage with these horses at some of the bigger shows where we have crowds of, you know, 15,000, 20,000, whatever, and these horses could hear all the people out in the arena yelling and screaming, you know, they're kicking at the stalls. They want out. They love it. I mean, most of them really, they get amped up by the crowds. I mean, you would see a distinct difference from rehearsal to performance. I mean, we'd always tell new guys, like, pay attention. Like, yep, things, you know, now you're a little bit comfortable. Things are going well in rehearsal and stuff, but this horse is going to, he's going to feed off that crowd like you do. You're both going to be jacked up on adrenaline. Keep it calm. Like, we always had to give the guys that extra speech of like, take a breath, because the horse is going to be hot going out there because they love it. They really loved it.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to, and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting, or do I wait for the next one, like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must-listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia, and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism. And he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's face it, money is the one subject we all need to deal with, but no one actually wants to talk about. The good news is there's a podcast helping you learn everything about money no one taught you. Meet Everyone's Talkin' Money, hosted by me, Shauna Game. Everyone's Talkin' Money focuses on relevant, inclusive, and forward-thinking conversations around money and just helps you get in a better relationship with your money no matter what your goals are. Do yourself a favor and subscribe to Everyone's Talkin' Money podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're talking about crowds that size. Were there any times when someone actually got hurt? Like when you were performing?
All right, and yeah.
What do you do in a case like that?
Plenty of times. It's tricky because this is live theater, you know, so there really is, and especially in front of these large crowds, there is no timeout. You know, there's no like, hold on everybody, you know, like we got an injury on the field, stop, you know. You have to creatively think on the fly how you're going to get through it. There was one time at this show working for the company that I was just referring to that was really intensive on horse training. And this guy is to date one of the best horsemen I know in my life. He went over to Europe and jousted in actual European jousting competitions. I think he was in Germany for a world's competition where he was treated like a joke because he was an American. And they gave him this horse that they thought he wasn't going to be able to do anything with. And turns out by the end of the competition, he finished like third in the world, and he had gotten this horse to do incredible stuff for these equestrian skills competitions that were all part of this tournament. So I mean, this guy has probably forgotten more about horses than I'll ever know. We're doing a show at a fairly large, it was one of the Pennsylvania shows. It's the first show of the day, which is a pretty, it's the equestrian skills show. So what we would do is for this particular show is we would set up this kind of obstacle course for one part of the show where we would have the horses jump over jumps, and you know, we would cut cabbage and stuff as the horse, you know, as we'd jump up, we'd cut cabbage, or we'd have them throw rings to us that we would catch. We'd run the horses between sticks, or we'd pick up a spear out of the ground and throw it in a bale. Like, it was this whole sort of horse obstacle course that we would lay out. And we would really compete with each other every day. A lot of guys do something similar like this, but in this particular show, just to make it fun for ourselves, we set up the script in a way that it didn't matter who would win this competition. So we'd be out there actually trying to get points and beat each other. It was a fun little thing we got to do. So by and large, it was the first show of the day is a very lighthearted show. We would end with a joust, but it was everything's in good fun sport joust, you know, no serious. We didn't use any blood packs or any of the, you know, that was all saved for later in the day. So in this particular show, we had this drag harness that we had made. And what we would do is we would say whoever lost this tournament joust at the end of the first show would have to be dragged out of the field in shame, which is a cool stunt. And we had a really nice deep sand field. So like in this harness, we did a lot of testing with the different types of harnesses and stuff to get this to work right, to make sure, you know, no one's going to get hurt. We had done this a bunch of times and everything was great. We're doing this first show one day, and I had the way that it would work is we had four guys in the show. And when the first two guys would come off, we would kind of, you know, the squires would take our horses backstage, and then we would stick around on the ground to kind of just help, almost be like bonus squires, you know, that we'd be there to make sure everything went okay. And so for this particular show, it was my job after I did my saddle fall and whatever that I would hang out, because it was ultimately my job to tie whoever lost the tournament joust of the day was going to be tied into the drag harness and hauled out. And it was my job to do that. So I'm standing off to the side of the field. And my buddy that I just was talking about, who's this fantastic horseman, he started his last joust pass with the guy he's riding against, and he does his saddle fall, and it looks like a normal routine saddle fall. He just kind of, it actually looked a little sort of less theatrical than I was used to seeing him do. It looked like he almost kind of just stuck in the sand like a long dart. It was kind of like really like anticlimactic, but it just looked like, okay, that was kind of a boring fall, whatever. So the master of arms of the show, who's like the MC, it's his horse that has the drag harness attached to it. So after my buddy falls off his horse, the MC kind of comes out and starts talking in what we call vamping, which is just, you know, he's just talking to the crowd to keep them interested, to buy time while we, you know, go ahead and get him tied into the harness and whatever. So he comes out and he's got his horse with the harness, and I go over and I notice that my buddy's not getting up yet. Normally by this point in the show, he would be kind of standing up and giving the audience the whole, aw shucks, you know, kind of like I'm defeated, you know, whatever. And, you know, and then about that time, you know, we'd have the harness over there and set him up and get him tied in and drag him out. Well, he's just laying in the sand. Like, he's not unconscious or anything. He's just not, like, he looks fine, but he's not getting up. So I walk over to him, and my buddy, who's the master of arms, starts, you know, buying time, talking to the crowd. And I lean down and the way that the quick hand method that we use to get through shows and when injuries happen is we just a stoplight system. You know, red is I'm hurt. I can't do much of anything. That's the worst case scenario. I've only heard that maybe twice in all my years doing these shows. Yellow is I'm hurt, and there's a lot of room in yellow. Like, yellow could mean, yeah, I'm cut, but we're just keep going. Or it could mean like, I'm pretty hurt, but I'm going to try to hack my way through the rest of what we got to do in the show and get through it. And then obviously green is no big deal. I'm fine. I walk up to him, and the first thing he says to me without saying anything else is just red. I'm red. I'm like, what? Like, I have no idea what to do, because this is one of the toughest guys I've ever known in my life. And I've seen this guy get like, where I would have been like red, dude. I've seen him get hurt where he was just like, not even yellow, just like fine. like bleeding. Like I've seen swords glance off, you know, cuts or whatever. Maybe it looked worse than it was, but like I've seen this guy get hurt and just like, I didn't even know pain could affect this man. Like he's one of those guys. Right. And so he says red and I'm like, what do we do? What's wrong? What, you know? And he's like, it's my leg. And because, you know, I saw him do this fall, and this fall just looked like he just kind of just lawn darted into the sand. It didn't look like even the type of fall that I was not thinking injury when I walked up to him, because none of this looked severe. I've seen guys plenty of times take really bad falls and you run over there right away. Like, uh-oh, this was not a big deal. And he's like, it's my leg. And I'm like, well, shit, man. Like, what do you want to do? Because he's supposed to get tied into this drag harness. Now, I'm like, can you stand? And he's like, you know, he's feeling around his leg. And he's like, no, dude. He's like, I'm fucked. Like, this is fucked. And so I'm like, shit. And I look up to my other friend, who's the master of arms, who's kind of like giving us glances over his shoulder every so often while he's, you know, trying to keep the crowd entertained, talking to him while me and my buddy are having this conversation in the sand about what we're about to do here. So, you know, I'm like, I look at him, I'm like, so what do you want to do, man? And he's like, let's just do it. Tie me in. And I'm like, are you sure? Because now I'm trying to deal with this fact of like, here's this dude I didn't even think felt pain, and he's so hurt he physically can't stand, and now he's telling me, oh, just tie me in the harness. I'm like, I'm thinking, like, if this guy's telling me he can't get up, there's something that's so wrong with him that I was worried about how we were even going to get him off the field in a safe way, let alone now you want me to tie you to the back of this horse and let my buddy do a full lap around the field and then drag you out the chute to around backstage. And
the show must go on, huh?
Yeah, man. He's just like, do it. So my friend who's the master of arms, my buddy John, like, looks over his shoulder at me and coincidentally my other friend who's also named John. And we both give him the nod of like, we're doing this. And at this point, my friend who's the master of arms, I think, has no idea what's going on. He just knows something's wrong. And he's an old school guy who was, you know, knew how to deal with this shit. So he was just handling it with the crowd until we were ready. But he still doesn't know what's up. So I just, he brings his horse around and I tie my friend into this harness. It's like these sort of cuffs that we had rigged up that he would kind of hold into. And on his belly, they drag him out. And he does a full lap around the field and he's rolling over and flopping around. And then they dragged him all the way around and back out the chute. Of course, the second he starts to drag, I just leave the field and run backstage waiting for him. And the way the field was set up is we had openings at the end of, it's a big oval, like sort of like a hockey rink shaped arena. In each of the corners that were upstage, which is, you know, away from the audience, we had gates that were like chutes that also had sand in it. So we did a lot of crazy equestrian stuff in the show where we had guys that would ride on the back, you know, standing on horses and stuff. So we do a lot of looping through the field. So we had this sort of chute that set up so that you could go out of the arena around back behind stage and then back into the arena through the other way. So I run back through and I'm back waiting in that chute as he does his lap and then comes off and gets disconnected. And so he comes back and he's, you know, he's covered in sand and dirt and stuff. And now everyone backstage is starting to panic because the tech people on the, you know, saw John didn't get up out in the show. So they're radioing backstage to the medical people and everything, like, something's wrong. Because again, none of us have ever seen this guy injured, especially not like this. So we get around backstage. All I could see was his thigh muscle just looked like it was a giant ball. Like it was just like swollen, like rapidly swollen. Like not a lot of time has passed and his leg is swelling up real bad. The medical, I mean, this fair had a great medical team and they were there quick and they got an ambulance in there, got him, you know, they put him on a board, got him up out of there. And turns out what he had done was when he fell, his quad, I believe is the muscle, it's his thigh muscle. The tendon actually ripped off of the bone and his muscle kind of like a shade on a window kind of rolled up in his leg. So when he tried to stand, like I said, this guy, pain does not affect him. So I'm sure he tried to stand and his leg just was not functioning as a leg, just not working the way a leg's supposed to work. But yeah, so then he was out not nearly as long as he should have been, but he was out. He was the lead of that show. So the guy who was the master of arms actually had to step into his position in that show because at that particular fair, we did a full-on storyline that would go throughout the day. So we would have plot-driven shows, like there was a human chess match we would do that would have big plot elements and things. So we weren't just jousting during the day. We had other obligations to be out there, you know, furthering the story and doing these other things. So it was a huge deal. Like, and this happened early in the season too. I think it was in the first couple of weeks of a show that runs about 12 weeks. So it was a crazy scramble for my friend to get into his part, but he did a great job and he killed it. It was a really great show. We had horses that would lay down. The queen would ride in and the horse she was on would lay down on its own so she could get off. We had horses that, that particular show, we had it would end where we were going to act like we were going to burn a girl at the stake. And we had this big pyrotechnic effect that would shoot this big 40-foot fireball up in the air when we rescued her and then rode through fire to escape. And like, it was this crazy show that involved just a ton of moving parts and a lot of training. And my buddy really jumped in and crushed it.
That does, it sounds like a lot of fun. You know, stuntmen that I've heard anyway, not necessarily just equestrian stuntmen, but stuntmen in general, often have injuries that kind of plague them through the rest of their life. Do you have anything like that?
Yeah, I consider myself to be pretty lucky because a lot of the guys I worked with doing this type of stuff and guys I worked with doing some stunts for films and some other things, pretty much all the what I would consider to be professional stunt guys, everybody's hurt. They're all hurt. If it's not an ongoing problem, like I knew a lot of guys who had bad arthritis in their hands and arms and stuff, just from the amount of times they've broken their fingers, broken their hands. But most of the guys that I worked with, especially in the joust company, were always dealing with injuries. I've seen guys, one of my best friends destroyed his right arm, broke both bones into, I don't know how many pieces, just turned it into dust and finished the show using that hand. So I got out pretty lucky. I was dragged again in that the show I was just talking about there, the crazy stunt show we did. I got dragged again, and that time I tore some ligaments in my spine, and I think I ruptured a disc. I have some issues with my neck for the same reason, because I've been thrown off of horses and onto fences and through fences and landed weird on fall. Because the thing about doing saddle falls with armor is even when you do it the right way, it hurts every time because you have a metal gorget on, which is, you know, all around your collarbone. And then you have spalders or pauldrons over your shoulders and then arms that are covered. So when you hit the ground, metal doesn't flex. So if you don't land right, something's jamming into somewhere. So most guys, we all, you know, dislocations are common. Broken bones are very common. Torn ligaments are super common. Concussions. Because like I said, we're jousting. There's times where I got hit in the head to no one's fault. I mean, it's a live stunt show and sometimes things don't. I think the time I'm thinking of in particular, it was during a rain show or it just had started raining so that my shield was really slick. So when I took the hit, when you're jousting against somebody theatrically, there's two different ways you can hold your lance. You can either do what's referred to as couching it, where you tuck it under your armpit and you fold your arm down along your side and you really hold it. Or what I would do and what most theatrical guys do is called floating, where your arm is more out to your side, like your elbow's out and the lance is floating like under your elbow and you're poking more than you're kind of twisting your body to hit. Since we're doing a theatrical form of jousting, I always found that to be better because it allows you to still make a good hit. It sounds good. And then I would kind of helicopter the lance over my head after the hit, you know, and then I could reset it easy that way. Plus, your arm is acting like a shock absorber. So I could make it sound really great with a hit, but I'm not drilling my buddy. I'm not really trying to take him off the horse. Well, there's some old school guys that we worked with who are really like to couch their lances and just lock it down on you, which is fine if they're accurate. But when they miss, you know, now they're really, their whole weight of their body and their horse is now behind them. So there was times where there was one particular show where a buddy, his hit skipped a little high off my shield, hit me in the head. And the hit in my helm wasn't the problem because, like I said, we wear real helms. I mean, like it took the hit. But because we aren't jousting in like 16th century armor where everything, we're not wearing a breast and back plate, so everything isn't locked together, my helm is free floating. I can still turn my head, which is great when I'm trying to get around the field and do stuff, but not so great when you get hit in the head by a lance because my head snapped back and then, you know, stars. And then I finished the show, but dude, I couldn't tell you, like I've seen pictures of me finishing that show, but I don't remember any of it. Stuff like that was really common where you just get your bell rung and your body just carries you through the rest of the show.
If someone, if there's a young person that wants to get into, of course, after hearing all the injuries, probably no, everybody's saying, no way, I don't want to do that. But if somebody wanted to get into that business today, how easy is it, or what would be the first step?
Go to Renaissance Fair, talk to, you know, ask to talk to some of the guys. I mean, most of these places, the companies are accessible, or contact them through their website. I know the Hanlonlees are probably always looking for squires, because it's a tough job. It's a tough life, but it's also really cool. I mean, you get to travel around the country. You get to perform in a lot of different places, and honestly, working for them is what led me into any other interesting performance thing I ever got to do in my life, from doing film work to choreography stuff for TV and things like that, that I only got because, you know, of the connections and the skills that company had provided me with. So,
right. Performing is performing, right?
Yeah. And a big shout out to those guys in the Hanlonlees Action Theater. There's a few of the remaining founding members that are still there, and each one of those guys I learned so much from stage combat to acting, how to play to camera, how to play when you're in the round versus, you know, a stage setup. I mean, there's so much I learned from them that set me up for other performances and things I did in my life later that I don't think I would have gotten just working from some other company or just learning just what they did. I mean, these guys taught me all kinds of stuff. But yeah, I would just say reach out to, you know, say that you're interested, but just know that it's probably not going to be a lot of money. Definitely not at first. And, it's hard work. I mean, you're going to be taking care of horses. And if those horses don't mean as much to you as they mean to the guys in the company, they won't keep you around. I mean, they don't take people that don't love those animals as much as we all do.
You got to have a passion for it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But I would say get into safer stage combat stuff where you don't have to be at such a high risk. I can teach you how to sword fight. That's much safer. I would say stick to that.
And for anyone that wants to ask Brandon any other questions, maybe ones that I didn't think of, he is in the Facebook group. So if you haven't joined our private Facebook group for listeners to this podcast, that's where we go. We discuss specific episodes with other listeners. I'm there. A lot of the previous guests from other episodes are in that group as well and can answer questions. And Brandon's in there, and he's happy to answer any questions as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate this. And thank you to anybody who has taken the time to listen to it. I really appreciate it.
And before we wrap up this episode, a couple of items. First, I want to let you know how you can contact me or get more involved with the What Was That Like community. You can definitely get in our Facebook group where we talk about podcast episodes and lots of other stuff. That's at whatwasthatlike.com/Facebook. And I also post something interesting or unusual just about every day on Instagram. And you can follow me there at whatwasthatlike. And if you have a really crazy experience that you think people would want to hear about, you can send me a summary and we can talk about it. You can do that right from the website. Just go to whatwasthatlike.com and click on Submit Your Story. And if you want to support the podcast, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. You can get access to exclusive bonus content and you'll have my eternal gratitude. Your support really does mean a lot. And of course, you can always email me. My email is scott@whatwasthatlike.com. I do read all my email personally, and I try to respond to every one. And finally, if you like baseball and you like true crime, here's the perfect podcast for you to check out. I'll see you again in 2 weeks.
The Deadball Podcast explores the characters behind our national pastime. We discuss their life on and off the field, to learn the triumphs and tragedy behind those who make the game. I'm your host, Nina Instead. Join us as Deadball digs into the stories behind the names. Find Deadball on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcatcher.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free, and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus. Or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking Try Free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.